The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch. John's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. It's a special show. It's a special occasion. This is the launch of year number 10 of the Buckmaster Radio Show. On this Friday, January 3rd, 2020, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We're live weekdays during the noon hour on 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Have our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts available for you at buckmastershow.com. Fridays, do a media shout-out to our media partners, and we're so pleased these people, many of them have been with us since day one. TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. The Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview is with Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman, a special education teacher elected in 2018, one of the first Democrats elected to statewide office in more than 10 years. Joining me in studio to talk with the superintendent, Dan Scheer, is here, editor of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan is also the editorial director for approximately two dozen newspapers owned by the Arizona-based WIC Communications Company. First of all, Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Is that exactly two dozen newspapers?
No, it's actually a little closer to 30. We picked up a couple last summer.
Wow.
So, yeah, we're still buying.
Very, very good. All right, let's go on the live line now up to the state capitol. Kathy Hoffman, Superintendent Hoffman, how are you, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very well. How would you characterize 2019 as far as public education is concerned in the state of Arizona?
I would say overall we made some really good gains, that there's many steps we took that I think are in the right direction, but we still have a lot of work to do.
We've got the state of the state, I believe, a week from Monday, correct?
It's coming up.
Yeah. What will the agenda items be concerning education that you would like to see covered?
I hope that we'll talk about equitable funding for our schools, and that there's definitely still a need for increased funding for across all areas, whether that's teacher pay, benefits, looking at school facilities. Mental health supports for our students is a huge need right now, so I think there's a lot of areas that need to be addressed.
How about the severe? Is it still a severe teacher shortage?
I would characterize it as so. I would say we're not losing as many teachers as we were over the past couple years, so I would say fortunately we're retaining more than we were before, but we're still losing many of our teachers and educators. And then of the positions across the state, there's still roughly a fifth of them are still filled by people who don't have proper certification. So they might have an emergency certification or a long-term substitute type of certification. And so I know that if we want to have high achievement for our students, that we need to have highly qualified teachers in every classroom.
Did I hear you say one in five Arizona teachers are not on a permanent basis?
That's correct, that they don't have the full certification.
Here's Dan Scheer, the Green Valley News.
How have you determined that mental health is an issue, and why should the schools address it?
Over the past year, I'm proud to say that I visited over 80 schools in all 15 of Arizona's counties, and every single school I go to, it's brought up as an issue that the mental health of our students is a high concern. The need for more school counselors, social workers is a significant concern. I know many of our students across the state still live in poverty, and I cannot tell you there. I think every single school I've been to has expressed need for more school counselors to help support their students.
What do you mean by mental health issues with students? Are they coming to school depressed? Is it just the fact that they're teenagers? Is it what is it?
a varied many things. So sometimes it's yes, sometimes they're depressed, sometimes there's anxiety issues, sometimes they're dealing with trauma at home, such as a parent or caregiver who's using drugs or opioids. Sometimes there's concerns with suicide. We've had, very sadly, we've had quite a few students commit suicide or die by suicide in Arizona, and that's highly alarming for us. And then, but some of our students have also had a family member who has died by suicide. So these types of experiences in homes causes trauma to our students, and then they come to school, and our teachers are faced with these challenges that can sometimes be presented as behaviors, whether the student is less willing to participate in class or is not as social as you might expect them to be, or they might act out and have behaviors that cause a disturbance in the classroom. So it's just critically important to have mental health professionals in the schools to be able to support all of our students.
You know, last year the issue that received the most attention on the state level was sex education, and you drove some of that. This year it's mental health. When does education get the spotlight?
Well, I would say they're all important. So students need to have they need to be in a good mental state and have their mental health supported in order to be ready to learn. Otherwise, they will be distracted or just not in a good state of mind to be ready to learn. So that's why it is such an important issue to me. But we, in the Department of Education, we have a very qualified and capable team working on that work on all of our standards. So like we have our science standards team, we have our K-12 standards group that we're also working on literacy and making sure that they provide professional development directly to schools and to teachers to make sure that we are teaching we have the most evidence and research-based instruction for literacy and as well as for math. And those skills are still critical for student achievement. But it does go back, as I was mentioning before, back to teacher recruitment and retention, because if we are churning through teachers and if we lose our teachers, or if they're coming into our classrooms without proper qualifications, then what kind of result should we expect?
What kind of student achievement have we seen? Have we seen some progress since you've been the superintendent of schools? Have we seen progress with student scores?
There have been some gains, and so I can't take too much credit because the AZ merit scores that we just saw this past fall were from the students took the test in the spring, and I only took office in January, so I can't take too much credit for any of those gains. But there were some small gains across across literacy and math. But there's just still so much work to be done, and this is also this is the end of the first year with the new science standards. And I think we need to keep emphasizing the need for science across all grade levels so that students start to learn those types of problem-solving and critical thinking skills. And then when they get to high school, I think it's important for them to have access to taking classes like physics and chemistry and biology. But one of our challenges is it's incredibly difficult to recruit teachers who have expertise in those areas. So, for example, in Arizona, we only have around 150 physics teachers for the whole state. And so it's incredibly difficult for schools to recruit physics teachers. And as a result, in Arizona, only about 20% of our high school students take physics, whereas the national average is 40%. So we are lagging behind in even offering that curriculum that I think is critically important for success beyond high school.
You were sworn in just about a year ago this week, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Celebrating that.
So what has this job, is the job what you expected? I mean, you came out of the classroom as a special ed teacher. You're now in administration. Do you miss the classroom, or how would you characterize it? Do you enjoy this job?
I love it. This job has far exceeded my expectations. And I think part of why I love it so much is the ability to stay connected with the classroom through my school visits. I've, as I said, visited over 80 schools this year, and across the entire state, I've probably been in more small towns than any other person in Arizona through my school visits. And it's been such an amazing learning experience. And so unique. And I love learning about the history of each community and learning about their achievements and what they want, what they're so proud of, but also learning about their challenges and learning more about how can I better serve our schools. But for me, the most important part of this job is to be the chief advocate for our public schools. And so I've been meeting regularly with our other state elected leaders and legislators to make sure that I'm advocating for best practice policies and funding to ensure that all students have the opportunities that they deserve.
We have Kathy Hoffman with us on the Buckmaster Show Live Line in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Superintendent Hoffman will stick around for another segment. We'll let her go at about 12:35 today, so there's still time for you to call in if you have a question for Kathy, 790-2040. Dan Shear will stick around as well. Right now, I want to tell our listeners, Dan, about you know what. Mona's Danish Bakery,
right.
Home of the Danish Kringle. Steve, the owner and chief baker, wants me to convey to everybody, Dan, what a great holiday season. They had so many of our Buckmaster Show listeners coming in, ordering beautiful pies, dinner rolls. I know our family had the dinner rolls for Christmas dinner. It's just so good. I wish now he'd ordered two dozen rather than one. They're open right now for lunch, and of course they do the breakfast, Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, open at 6:30. And they do the breakfast. They can do breakfast up till about 2 or so, but right now they're doing the lunch. Go to monasdanishbakery.com. There's also a link at the Buckmaster Show website, and this would be a really good opportunity, Dan, to not only thank Steve and Mona's and Green Things, and there are nearly two dozen partners, Dan, you know, on the website, mm-hmm. that people that believe in what we've done over the last 9 full years, and now we launch into year 10. I'm just one grateful camper, let's put it like that.
And those are the people who really give us the foundation to build a good show on.
Yep.
And same
yep.
with the newspaper, you know, mm-hmm. those who support us through advertising believe in what we do.
Yes, indeed. And so very, very pleased. We'll be back with Kathy Hoffman after we take this break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Anniversary Edition as we get into year 10 here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our Friday Focus interview today, the Superintendent of Public Education in Arizona, Public Instruction, to be specific, it's Kathy Hoffman. Once you're a special ed teacher, Kathy, you are a special ed teacher. And I want to talk a little bit about some of these bills that will be introduced. There's a Republican Representative John Fillmore. One of the bills he's introducing has to do with preventing Arizona schools from requiring vaccinations or refusing to admit any unvaccinated student, but this would protect the parents from opting out. Is that necessary in your opinion?
That's one of his. He has some bills that I think we can work well together on, but that's one that I can't get behind and support, because I do strongly believe that in order for our students and school communities to have protection and be in the best health, that we do need our students to be vaccinated to make sure that they can be successful in our schools.
He's also talked about making sure every school, they say the Pledge of Allegiance, you mentioned in the first segment, I think you said you visited 80 schools so far. Are they all saying the pledge?
Well, I'm certainly not the Pledge of Allegiance police, and I don't think anyone should be. In every school I've been in and every school I've worked in, we say the pledge daily and typically at the beginning of every assembly, and it seems like we're creating a problem rather than looking for actual problems to solve for that one.
Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News. Dan, you speak at a lot of schools, don't you?
Yeah, we go into a lot of schools, and I've noticed, particularly in the high schools, that they stand for the pledge, but I'm the only one actually saying it. And I think part of it is what Ms. Hoffman just said, and that is they say it every day, and I think it gets a little old for them, but the principles found in the pledge are certainly something I think most of us would support and be behind. But you can't force people, you know. And at that age, of course, they're just exploring who they are, and there's some shock value involved and whatever. So if you make it an issue, it's going to turn into a bigger issue. It's kind of interesting.
Go ahead, Dan.
We also, last spring, we looked at one school. It was a K-8 school. It had 600 students, and there were 18 of them, we're getting back to the vaccination thing, 18 who were not vaccinated. They had the waiver. The year before, it was 13. So this really doesn't appear to be that big of a problem. Only four of them had zero vaccinations at all. So is this really, are you saying that it's really unvaccinated kids is really an issue in the schools?
Well, I do think that it's an issue in the sense that, so when we look at the reports from the Department of Health Services in Arizona, their reports say that only, I think it's 42% of our kindergarten classrooms have the community immunity, meaning that so you have to have at least 95% of the classroom to have the herd immunity needed to protect against a outbreak, and only 42% of our kindergarten classrooms are covered for the whole state. So I'm concerned that because of having so many types of ways to get around vaccinations, and also a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding of what is best practice, we know that vaccines are well researched, and that of course there are kids who can't be vaccinated who do have health issues that prevent them from being vaccinated. But I think by and large we need to make sure that for kids that can be vaccinated, they should be. And you know, I'm seeing in other states that have had outbreaks in recent months. I know up in Washington and New York. So I think we need to make sure we're doing our due diligence here in Arizona.
And I want to make sure I understood you. So did you say 42% of kindergartners are vaccinated? Now, what is...
Let me rephrase that. So it's 42% of our classrooms are protected and have the herd immunity. So only roughly 4 out of 10 of our classrooms have the herd immunity. And to have herd immunity, you have to have at least 95% of the students be vaccinated.
And then what is the requirement for an incoming kindergartner? Don't they have to be vaccinated?
Well, so there are exemptions. So yes, but with the exemptions for religious or medical types of exemptions, that's why we're seeing the numbers dropping.
Okay, so it's waivers that people have sought.
Exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The Republicans, some of them anyway, including I believe the top Republican in the state House, have called you a radical. Saying that you are trying to strip parental rights, you're crippling the state's voucher program, and sexualizing school children instead of focusing on reading, writing, and arithmetic. What's your response to that, Kathy?
Well, I think it's a bit laughable because I'm very focused on what our students need, what our teachers need, and they're making these outrageous claims with no evidence. Many times they're making up things saying I've said something that I haven't said. And so it's actually what's most frustrating about it is that these are individuals that I want to be working with, and I have reached out to them. I have had meetings with most of them. And so this is exactly why people are tired of politics, is to see these types of partisan attacks against each other. So I just ignore that. It's a distraction, and I would rather get to work on the real issues rather than into these types of, I think, immature personal attacks.
Let me read a brief comment from a parent who said, schools should never be in competition with what the parents are trying to teach at home and how they are directing their children. And this was somebody who directed this comment, I believe, at you. Do you feel like sometimes you are crossways with parents? I mean, vaccinations would be one of those areas, but do you think in other areas you've gotten crossways with parents, maybe on sex education or some of the mental health stuff?
I can see where a parent might think that, but what I think my job is what's in the best interest of all students, and not every child has a well-educated parent who can teach them everything they need to know to be a well-informed citizen and to make healthy decisions for themselves. So I would say we need to make sure that our schools are held accountable to be teaching information that is research-based, medically accurate, comprehensive, and that we need to make sure that our children have the best information rather than expecting that. I just know there's so many parents out there who are not equipped to teach on these subjects, and that's why we need to make sure that the schools are also held accountable for teaching it.
You are also overseeing the state's charter schools, correct? That's part of your responsibility.
I am, as I serve on the state charter school board.
There was an effort, and Dan Scheer, correct me if I'm wrong here, wasn't there an effort, Dan, to kind of look at charter schools and give it more of a kind of an oversight that of who's actually running these charter schools, Dan?
That's been, for decades. That's always been the question is, and what are the standards for the teachers?
Exactly. Kathy, what do you think about that, Kathy Hoffman?
Yeah, I think that we still have work to do in that area as well. So on the State Charter School Board, I can speak to the work that we've been doing there. To we look at schools, charter schools' academic performance and their financial performances. Where we still have an issue is that there's just not as much transparency, especially of the finances of our charter schools, and that's where we see corruption or misspent funding. And I still have a very hard time with the issue of charter school CEOs profiting millions upon millions of dollars. And that, to me, that just doesn't sit right when I know we have teachers entering the field making as little as $35,000 and struggling to make ends meet. So that's where I have issues, and I wish that our legislature would take more action on this and have a bipartisan solution for it. But we saw what happened in the last session, so it will, I'm just not sure what's changed since then.
California schools have decided that that the teachers will, actually schools will no longer be able to suspend students in elementary and middle school for disrupting school activities or, quote, willfully defying the authority of teachers or administrators. What do you think of that? And doesn't that really start taking control out of the hands of teachers and things that are going on inside the classroom?
Yeah, I think Arizona tends to be more of a local control state, so a lot of these disciplinary decisions are made at the more local level, at the district level. I would say that this is something that should be evaluated. I know many of our schools have implemented policies that to have more in-school suspensions rather than sending them home or expelling them because then those students are afloat and not have, and then where do they end up? Then we have even greater issues at times, and parents have a hard time finding a different school setting for them where they can be successful. So I think that this is something we should continue to be evaluating, but oftentimes it is more of a local control issue.
Are teachers going to get the raise that was promised them? One in a 3-year package that the governor promised teachers?
Yeah, this is the last year of the 20 by 20 plan. I am confident that the final installment will go out, I think. But the issue is that within that legislation and the budget, the 20 by 2020 plan only provided raises or funding for homeroom classroom teachers. And so that did not include our special education teachers or PE or music teachers or any of our support staff. And so I think that I do think that it will be delivered the way it was in the last 2 years. However, we definitely have more work to be done there when it comes to teacher pay. And I would say we need to be regionally competitive. We are about $10,000 off from our neighboring states when it comes to teacher pay. And I know that Utah did a study to look at what is a livable wage for teachers, and they came up with $60,000. And they're looking at how can we make sure that we have a budget for all teachers to be making at least $60,000. And I would encourage Arizona to be looking at similar studies and measures.
What is our average pay, Kathy Hoffman, for teachers in this state?
I think right now it's around $45,000 is about the average, and it can range from, I think the lowest I've seen is around, I want to say like $33,000 or $35,000, but then it can go up pretty high where we have some districts that are able to do $60,000. So it can vary greatly from district to district, and a lot of that is due to what the neighborhood and community votes on in their bonds and overrides. And that's another way where we see a lot of inequities in our school finance system across the state, is that some communities are very successful in passing these bonds and overrides, which increases their district's budgets, and that's accomplished by increasing the local property taxes, whereas other communities are not able to get these passed. Some just don't even try because they know that their communities are not in support of raising their property taxes. And so that's why we see such discrepancies in teacher pay across the state.
All right, Kathy Hoffman, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. We'll be
Thank
following
you, Bill.
The legislative session, which will be getting underway very shortly. In fact, coming up right after after your interview and we take the break, Luigi Del Puerto, who covers the state legislature for the Arizona Capital Times, will join us on the live line, and we'll ask Luigi about education and how it will play in with the state budget. So all the best to you. Happy New Year to you, Kathy Hoffman.
Thank you, Bill and Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Kathy Hoffman, superintendent of the public instruction here in the state of Arizona. We're going to take now the mid-show break on the Buckmaster Anniversary Edition, launching into our year number 10. Got 9 full years of the program, and Dan Scheer sticks around with us. Luigi Del Puerto is after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show here on 1030, Tucson's choice for news talk in Southern Arizona. Luigi Del Puerto is with us on the Buckmaster Show live line in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. Luigi oversees the Arizona Capital Times. Also with me in studio here in Tucson, Dan Scheer, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Luigi, how are you? How was your holiday?
It was good. He was quiet, stayed at home, didn't do a whole lot, which is, you know, which is awesome.
Yep.
How about you?
Yeah, I had a great holiday. Thank you for asking. And it's a holiday here at the Buckmaster Show because we're launching Luigi into our 10th year of the radio.
Oh, wow.
I know, 9 full years under our belt, and we now launch with this show into year number 10. Okay, we have the State of the State, I believe, 1 week from today. Is that correct?
That's correct. So this session officially starts on January 13th. That's the second Monday of the year. And that same day, the governor is going to unveil his State of the State, which will outline his agenda for the upcoming session. We will know the broad outlines of what he wants to do, but we really won't know the details until Friday, 2 weeks from now, January 17. That's when he unveils his budget. And then we'll figure out if his speech matches with what he is willing to fund.
We just had Kathy Hoffman, Luigi, on the program as our Friday Focus interview, and she was not quite sure when I asked her if she understood what might be in that State of the State concerning education. Any hints that you might have for us?
You know, typically it's very hard to get a good picture of what the governor wants to do, but we have some hints, if you will. I think the governor is going to focus a lot on K-12 education. I think he's going to focus on the achievement gap. That means, you know, the gap that in which some schools and their students fare a lot better than other schools and their students, and that's mostly tied to income level. You know, poorer schools or schools in poorer areas typically have a lower performance compared to wealthier schools and wealthier school districts. So I think you're going to see the governor focus on that. You know, the economy is doing really well. Last time there was a budget briefing, the JLBC, the budget research arm of the legislature, said that there's going to be at least $170 million in ongoing funds in 2021. For the fiscal budget 21, the available one-time funds is around $475 million. And that was back in October. Things have improved since then. And so there's going to be some money to fight over. And the suspicion is that, or the prevailing sentiment is that, most of that money will go to K-12 education.
What will be the marquee issue for this session, if you had to guess at something, Luigi?
It will be K-12 education. It has been that way the last couple years. And given that the economy is doing really well, that means we're not really focusing on, you know, how to help the economy, how to help corporations. We've sort of saturated to a certain extent what the sort of the tax incentives that we can provide them, and there's enough funds to focus on the things that had been either neglected or did not get their funding reset to the levels before the recession of the last decade. But I think K-12 education is going to be the main focus. This is where a lot of attention was made last year, and I think the governor wants to do something really substantial in 21 budget, this upcoming budget session.
Were there any changes in leadership positions going into this session?
There had been minor changes in leadership positions in the governor's office. For example, I think a couple of their advisors have left, but not a whole lot. In the Senate, you know, you normally would see a couple of turnovers and some retirements and a few changes as well in policy advisors. For example, I can think of Josh Credit, you know, leaving the Arizona House and going over to the Attorney General's office. But by and large, things have largely remained the same in terms of leadership positions and staffing in, you know, the legislature and in the governor's office.
My experience, and perhaps you would echo that when we have these election years, 2020 an election year for the state, you're going to see perhaps I don't want to say hurrying up things, but kind of a reluctance to keep a session going well into, say, April or May. They usually want to get out and start doing some politicking, correct?
That is correct. That's sort of the prevailing sentiment. People want to get things done so they can go back to their districts and start campaigning. Please note that we have a presidential race, so that's going to drown out a lot of these down-ticket races, meaning legislative races. There's a U.S. Senate race that's going to be one of the biggest ones in the country.
Yep.
And I think there's people are anxious to get the job done in the legislature and go back to their districts. That said, I would be very hesitant to speculate when they would in fact end. We've seen sessions in which it's an election year and they've dragged on for a long time. There are big issues that we anticipate that they'll fight over, and it really depends on what sort of appetite they have for getting, you know, a lot of these major things done. And if they want to push and get those things done, we may not end in April. We may, spill over into May, but I think the expectation is that if they did spill over into May, it's not going to be that long.
Well, we've got enough.
We'll have to wrap things up.
We have enough local candidates that I could be interviewing different local candidates starting next week on every show. I mean, and these down races probably aren't going to get very much attention. Luigi, we're going to let you go. I want to talk with Dan Scheer about a couple of local issues, but I want to wish you, Luigi, a very happy new year, and we will talk as we get in to the 2020 legislative session. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and congratulations on your next 10 years.
Thank you very much, Luigi Del Puerto.
Have a good one. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. The overseeing the Arizona Capital Times. And he does bring up a good point, Dan. I mean, look at some of these races already. Take the District 1 supervisors. Everybody seems to already be lining up for that. I'm even hearing Mike Boyd, one-time Republican supervisor before Ann Day. This goes back a long time, back into the early 90s, that Mike's now thinking about getting into it. Vic Williams, I saw on Facebook, he's got some kind of a campaign event this weekend. So the folks are lining up for District 1.
I have always said that as far as the supervisors go, the first thing you have to do with the voters is tell them exactly what their job is. Because a lot of them simply don't understand, particularly if they're in an incorporated community. So once we do that, people will get on board and understand that this is a very powerful position in Pima County.
Dan, we've got the sheriff coming on next week. I just booked that with Sheriff Napier last night. It's very important to hear from him. He's floated a proposal, a compromise to the board on this Stone Garden thing. It just seems like every day there's a new development on it.
He doesn't want to give up that money. After a lot of contentious meetings, the Board of Supervisors approved Operation Stone Garden last May, and then they threw in there some humanitarian aid, which ultimately was rejected by Department of Homeland Security. We just found this out in recent days. And he's now proposing a couple of ideas that that hopefully will get him the rest of that money. And it would be things like limiting the amount of overtime deputies can get to kind of ease the burden on the county pension system, which was one of the concerns, or asking those who have a lot of time in or maybe about to retire to not spike their pensions using this overtime money from Stone Garden. This is all stuff that the county was really concerned with. But really what it comes down to probably is Sharon Bronson. She's the one who last May split with the Democrats and voted for this. It was a 3-2 vote. We talked to her yesterday, and she did not say that she would say no to this, but she came really close to it. And she is very concerned about the burden on the on the county taxpayers, and she doesn't think that his plan is probably going to address that, at least not to the point of her satisfaction.
Well, there were all sorts of concerns about humanitarian aid. When this went to the Trump administration, there were concerns, would funding under the Stone Garden umbrella qualify as to be covered some of this humanitarian aid for the refugee centers here in Tucson? Those were questions right out of the gate.
Right, and Pima County certainly thought that if you I guess if you worded it the right way, that it would be covered, and so they put in the application this way and, again, ultimately rejected. However, the application is open until the end of February. They can still go after this money, but it's real clear that the feds are not happy with spending money on asylum seekers or this humanitarian aid. And Sheriff Napier is now saying, look, there's a different pot of money out there that maybe you can go for to cover the cost, because the county is into this for already over $500,000 paying for the asylum seekers that are coming through. And they're saying, we're committed to them. I mean, it's better than having them dumped on the street. That would cause more issues. But we're in it. We thought we would get paid back, at least in part, by Stone Garden money, and we haven't been. So they're trying to work this out. But Steve Christie told us he thinks it's going to go through. I don't know what he knows that we don't know, but maybe he does. And so we'll see.
Did I see something about funding from the road funding? I saw a news release yesterday.
Road funding. Oh, I missed it.
All right. Okay. A lot of stuff came out.
A lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff came out during a time when probably no one was looking.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a brief thing we're working on for Sunday, and that is that there's a federal legislation out there that would allow Canadians to stay in the United States, that we're talking winter visitors, 8 months rather than 6. And
great.
And so would it be good for the economy? Would it be good for them? We're exploring that, and it'll be in Sunday's paper.
I think it would be great.
Interesting
we have a
idea.
Lot of Canadian friends here in town. Dan Scheer, thank you very much. We'll look for your work at the Green Valley News and the Saharita Sun, and your work with WIC Communications keeps you very busy and
sure
will
does.
Be into 2020, and we'll look forward to your work here with us on this program. All right, the Buckmaster Show continues in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We have Matt Russell with our weekend watch. Matt is the Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage editor, and he'll be joining us right after we take this break.
This is Moa Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
All right, time to stir it up, baby. It's Weekend Watch with Matt Russell on this, the launch of year 10 here on the Buckmaster Show. Weekend Watch presented by our very good friends in Silver City and Grant County. What a wonderful partner these folks have been to the Buckmaster Show. It's just a three-hour drive to a lovely portion of the United States, the southwest corner of the land of enchantment. Please visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Matt Russell, Inside Tucson Business food and beverage columnist. Matt, of course, an award-winning publicist, still recovering from New Year's Eve. Hello, Mr. Russell.
Yes, recovery is the operative word, but let me wish you and all of Team Buckmaster, I mean, a happy anniversary. I can't believe that you're going into year 10. I mean, that's nearly a decade of deliciousness for Weekend Watch.
You've been a part of it since day one, and we're so appreciative. I know you love the parish. That's been a spot that you've talked about over the years. Anything new over at that restaurant?
Yeah, well, Bill, you know, following a heavy holiday season, there are a lot of people who kind of choose to lay off the liquor for the first 31 days of the year as a cleansing strategy. This trend is actually called Dry January.
What?
And several restaurants across town are catering to this crowd with mocktails that are just as imaginative as their boozy counterparts, like you said, the Parish.
Sure.
On Oracle Road. They've got a pineapple mojito with fresh mint. They have a prickly pear palmer with herbal iced tea, honey syrup, and cold-pressed lemon. And one of the really cool ones, a sweet romance with coconut water and lavender syrup and house-made lemonade. I say go ahead and give the old liver a break this weekend with these delightfully virgin cocktails at the Parish.
I'll tell you, you're sure wetting my whistle. Those sounds like delicious mocktails. A lot of folks roll out, a lot of restaurant owners roll out new menus. Anything on that front, Matt Russell?
Yes. Well, ever since my recent travels to Greece, my interest in Greek cuisine has really heightened. And I'm happy to report that Pelio Grill on University Boulevard has just launched a brand new 2020 menu. Now, in addition to their classic Greek dishes like souvlaki and spanakopita, you're going to see some fun burgers like lamb burgers and Spartan burgers, 9 different Greek salads. They got lamb shanks, lamb chops, along with several vegetarian and vegan dishes. Now, if you're hungry like I always am, start your lunch or dinner with the Herculean. Now, this is a heap of Greek fries topped with sliced gyro meat, creamy tzatziki, and spicy tomato sauce. I tell you, the new Pelio Grill menu is OPA worthy, so try it this weekend.
How about rounding out the weekend at the Living Room?
There are so many places where I love to kind of wind my weekend down. One of them is the Living Room, of course, up at La Encantada. They call it Sunday Fun Day. And it's the venue for their brunch and bubbles program from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You'll enjoy sparkling wines from Italy, Spain, and France, free-flowing mimosas, some fun brunchy cocktails, and some thoughtful menu items of breakfast dishes, 5 different kinds of crepes, and their famous donut holes that they inject with chocolate Bavarian cream. You heard me right. It's this Sunday and every Sunday at Sunday Funday at the Living Room.
Congratulations to you and everybody associated with the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl, Matt Russell. What a success.
Yeah, I tell you what, the fifth bowl was a one for the books. It was spectacular weather. It was a great game. I had the privilege of donning a very tacky red sports coat.
I saw that on Facebook.
It was a great game, and it's such a privilege to be associated with a bowl game that gives all of its net proceeds to charity.
Well, it was a terrific success, and of course, don't forget the taco drop.
Yeah, I say Times Square can have its ball in downtown Tucson. The taco, 15-foot by 8-foot taco, dropped into the coming hands of one lucky Tucsonan. It was an art piece that certainly will get international recognition for sure.
There you go. Happy New Year, Matt. Thank you for everything you've done being associated with the Buckmaster program.
It's been my privilege, Bill. Happy New Year to you and all.
Thank you very much. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by a fine young German composer, Christophan. There's a link to his work at buckmastershow.com. Thanks to my longtime assistant, Rosemary Brandt, everybody here at KVOI, including engineer and producer John Couch. Thank you, John. The entire team at Bustos Media Tucson, all of us wish you a safe and pleasant weekend, and thank you very much for your support over the past 9 years. Let's begin year 10 Monday. Have a great weekend.